from all three of these different approaches is that it really comes down to congruency and making sure that that unmet need or that positive intention is met by multiple choices. So it comes down to choice and congruency. The way you get congruency is by identifying that unmet intent, that positive intention. The way you get choice is by putting in, multiple choices that meet those unmet intentions.
Welcome back to another episode of Cultivating Change, everyone. I'm your host, Alex Corey. Thanks so much for stopping by. This is a very well-timed episode. We're going over habits and change, as the podcast name is Cultivating Change. And that's what I really love getting out of each one of my podcast guests is how they actually made and had sustainable change in their life. That's the hard part, in my opinion. We can want better nutrition, we can want better movement, fitness, we can want to reshape our body, we can want better health, we can want better financial status, we could want to make more money, just make life easier, just to feel more alive. That's usually what I go for. But it's the how to, the nitty-gritty of after you make a decision, then what, then what, then what, right? Before the consistency and the discipline sticks in. So that is where William Reed, Wills Reed, comes into play. We met at a local coffee shop close by. We're both outside of Asheville, North Carolina, just north of it. And I saw his business card and really wanted to just pick his brain. He works with a number of well-known and some technologies I hadn't heard about. One is neuro-linguistic programming, which is the literal rewiring of the brain and neurotransmitters and pathways, which is the how-to of habit change, in my opinion. Some new flavors of that, and a technology I hadn't heard about or a protocol in this one called RTT, and that is Rapid Transformational Therapy, which deals a lot more with early childhood regression, and it's a hypnotic state where you can actually go in and find and slightly tweak your perspective and early childhood memories and hold on you, and that addresses a lot of the self-sabotage, the self-limiting beliefs. This episode is a lot about getting out of your own way, which is something I've tried to instill in myself and my business and my health and belief systems. So this is at the core of identity and of the actual change. And we'll get right in the conversation with Wills Reed.
Awesome. Love it. Yeah, I'm so glad that we that you reached out and we were able to connect.
Yeah, welcome to Cultivating Change.
Thank you. Good to
Could
be
we
here.
start just by, I don't know if I got your or remember vividly your backstory. So I'm into the science of change, right? Like I mentioned when we were having some coffee together, the part of habit change, lifestyle change, the change is always the hard part for me specifically and most of the people I work with. The data is nice to have, and everyone knows usually what they should do in their mind for their next step, but it's the how to not spend all of the willpower and drive to consistently do it. It's the change part that's hard, and that's why I think your work in NLP, so neuro-linguistic programming, and RTT is
Yeah,
pretty,
rapid transformational
can
therapy.
be pretty transformative. So if you could just remind me again how you found those modalities of transformation.
It was actually kind of by mistake that I found them. I was in a doctoral program up in Massachusetts, getting a studying for a degree in clinical psychology, and the field placement that I was at kind of had a bit of a lack of training, and I felt like the classes that I was in weren't really giving me the tools I needed to help the clients I was working with. So I started kind of looking more broadly as far as like things that I could implement in practice to help people. And I found a master class by Marissa Peer, the founder of Rapid Transformational Therapy. Thought it was really interesting how she talked about language, the subconscious mind, and how we can use language to access the subconscious mind and change how we perceive and and interact with the world and other people. And I started using some of her basic approaches and techniques with the people I was working with, and was really pleased by how the results that we were getting. As it turned out, I decided that program wasn't for me. And I had about a year off before I went into another program. And during that time, I chose to go and get fully certified in rapid transformational therapy through her school. And then from there, that led me to discover NLP. And I found NLP kind of filled in some of the questions I had about rapid transformational therapy that hadn't been fully answered there. So it complemented it really well. And from there on, it's just kind of been a deepening journey of exploration as far as those modalities, as well as complementary modalities that can be used in the field of change work.
Yeah. Could you give refresh and give me a better or a more contextual framework for what rapid transformational technology looks like? So you mentioned that it was using language to talk directly to the subconscious. Would you differentiate between like unconscious and subconscious, or what do you think of when you think of the subconscious?
Great question. When I talk about the subconscious, I don't make a distinction between unconscious and subconscious. I find sometimes people respond better to subconscious than unconscious. I know when I was first kind of introduced to the idea, part of me was like, well, the unconscious doesn't sound like that's a good thing. And what we really mean is that the subconscious is this incredible ally full of resources that could help us. But most like fundamentally, when I talk about the subconscious, I mean all of those processes and all of that information which is currently not in your conscious mind. So our information is streaming in through our, sensory organs right now as we're talking, like 11 million bits per second. And it's all being processed by the unconscious. The unconscious is also keeping your heart rate at a healthy level and keeping your blood pressure at the right level and doing, millions and millions of other processes in the body. And what we're conscious of is a very, very small portion of that, right? You're probably not conscious of your left toe as I'm talking to you right now, but now you are. But before that, it was somewhere else in your, it was available to you, but you weren't conscious of it. And the subconscious mind, although it's usually not accessible to us in our conscious state, when we enter into states of deep re relaxation, trance states, meditation, we start to be able to access that sort of system of intelligence that really is running the whole show here, and that we're kind of our conscious mind is aware of only a small part of.
Would you say the conscious mind is almost where our locus of attention is focused? So it's kind of the laser beam, so to speak. And then the subconscious sounds like actually more of us in totality. So kind of, I think of it as the autopilot, right? Just everything that runs you that doesn't have your direct conscious attention, so that you're, I mean, I always think of the conscious mind, I always think of the cortex as just high level decisions and kind of scanning for survival. It's more complex than that, obviously, but I think subconscious as like the 95% that's actually keeping us alive, and probably most of the, almost like a hard drive on a computer, like it stores most things, and then RAM, random access memory, or working memory would be kind of what's in current attention. Is that accurate at all?
Yeah, I think that's a really great metaphor and a way to think about it. And The conscious mind really does, I think, kind of come down to the attentional system, you know, the anterior cingulate cortex, especially in the prefrontal cortex. And it, like you said, it has a lot to do with kind of scanning the environment for threats. And that's actually one thing that when you're in a state of meditation or relaxation or trance, that part of your brain that's scanning the environment kind of goes offline and lets you drop more into the sensations in your body and what's coming up there. Yeah, when it comes to like the subconscious, another way to think about it is just through language, right? We're conscious of the words we're speaking right now, but the exact reason why I'm choosing the words that I'm choosing, and the exact reason why you're deriving the meaning from the words that you are, is a subconscious process. Like, I have no idea why I'm being moved to say these things right now. I have a conscious intention of what I want to express, and then everything comes from some other part, like the, you know, like that deeper, memory that you were talking about just
Right.
now on the computer.
I always think of the Matrix
Yeah.
and sort of Morpheus, like just literally uploading programs into Neo's subconscious, right? It just teaches him how to do kung fu. And you're just like, you know this. Like it, you didn't have to sort of go through the actual learning process. And that's what, you know, it's terrifying whenever I was thinking when I was 15 and was terrified to learn how to drive. And you're just like, everyone knows how to drive. This obviously isn't a terrible thing, but it's, if you could just skip over that like learning hurdle and just have it like injected into your subconscious, that would be nice sometimes. But I think that happens with
Yeah.
other things, right? That's
Yeah.
probably where we get ourselves into trouble. It's just we get programmed whenever we're not consciously doing it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I mean, I guess, you know, in a way, when we are kids and we're just like sitting on the couch watching TV or whatever it is, there's, you know, that is kind of a state of mind where you go into kind of a trance state when you're watching TV, right? Someone says something to you and you might not hear what they say the first time. And there's all kinds of, you know, kind of cultural conditioning for the good and for the not that kind of comes through that medium.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go back so I can get a better understanding of with that definition and framework of subconscious and conscious in mind, could you describe RTT again?
Yeah. So, RTT, it's really a combination of a few different modalities that Marissa Peer has put together over, I think, her 30 years in the field to really make a package that's can really get to the heart of what someone is struggling with very quickly. And it can also be used for not just, you know, issues. It can be used to improve performance, access states of peak performance. And it does that through this idea of using the subconscious mind, helping people access that state of deep relaxation or meditation or trance or hypnosis. I like to stay away from that word though in general because it's such a loaded term. A lot of people just think of stage hypnotists at the fair when they hear about that, and it's really completely different from that, at least how we're using it here in RTT. And then RTT looks at where is the unmet need here in the context of a problem? What is this problem behavior or this problem symptom trying to solve? What is the unmet need that didn't get met earlier on in life? And what are some ways that we can then go about providing that unmet need with the resources required to really make it feel whole and complete again? And when that happens, and it can happen as quickly as one session to three sessions, there's kind of a big change, a big transformation that can take place at the subconscious and conscious level of mind. And provide the person with a different quality of experience or more choice in that area of life.
Okay, that was nice. And you mentioned congruency, I believe, when we were speaking last. Can you go over your de I absolutely love the definition you had of congruency, and it kind of made things click a little more. Could you go over that briefly again?
I told you a story that one of my NLP mentors told about being in bed one morning and hearing this kind of crackling sound through the wall, and looking out the window, he saw that his porch was on fire. And he had been kind of procrastinating getting out of bed before that, and all of a sudden, as soon as he saw that his porch was on fire, without even thinking about it, he was out of bed and out of the house, like that, a snap of the fingers. And that's an example of congruency. But when he was in bed procrastinating, part of him was comfortable, didn't want to get out of bed, and part of him was feeling like, oh, like maybe I should get out of bed, time to make that pot of tea, whatever it is. And there's kind of a conflict between his conscious mind and his unconscious mind. But when he saw that fire through his window, all of a sudden every process in his body was aligned for a single purpose, a single intention to keep him safe and get him out of the house. And that's an example of congruency. There wasn't one bit of him in that moment that was thinking like, oh, like, I'll just stay in bed another 5 minutes and then deal with the fire. And he was out of bed right away. And that's kind of the case when it comes to habit change and habit formation. Is that, at least in the early stages, and certainly if people are persisting and trying to change a habit, what often is the case is there's a lack of congruency between the conscious desire and the subconscious mind. And when that's the case, efforting more, trying harder usually isn't going to be the solution. The solution in that case is usually to make some kind of subconscious or unconscious change, so that then there can be that congruency between the desire and the wish to have this certain habit or to be rid of this certain habit, and the willingness of the unconscious parts of ourself to make that happen, right? Those kind of those deep habits, those habits, the more than just the habit of the behavior, the habit of thought, and the whole psychological habit that underlies that behavior. And so getting back to RTT, that's really what it looks at, is changing the habit of thought instead of the habit of action, right? Because under every action, there's going to be a habit of thought. And if people try and try and try to change that habit of action, but it doesn't work, then you need to look a little deeper and change that habit of thought, which usually is partly unconscious, at least.
Yeah, and I can think of the reason you described of congruency pops up to like flow states in my brain. So like when I'm mountain biking, where usually people think of when they're in like, well, when time disappears, like all of your body and mind is focused on, like if you're just flying down a mountain, you're not thinking about other things. All of your body is focused on A, like survival, but B, the enjoyment. You've got some serious stress hormones coursing through your body. And I think that's probably when congruency is easiest attained, is when there's a flood of stress hormones for pleasure or avoidance or whatever. So the question is always, how do you get that congruency when you're not in a state of stress, right? How do you get that in normal waking life to something that, I'd be great if it was pleasurable, like your purpose or your work or something, how to get that alignment without the flood of cortisol and adrenaline running through your body.
And that's part of the trick, right? Is that our bodies are really great at helping us in the moment. And that's also part of the problem when it comes to habits, is that in the moment you either don't want to do it Or, you really, you're thinking, oh, like I'll stop this bad habit tomorrow, and in the moment, our bodies are kind of have this whole different way of operating. But then when it comes to like purpose and lifestyle and all of that, there's our bodies seem to kind of lack that kind of concept of time that work is more of a conscious process. So it can be, I think, really challenging. I know it has been in my life to find that consistent congruency with something. And I found that, hypnosis and RTT has helped a lot in that area for me, certainly.
Yeah, so you mentioned you let me know when it's a good segue into NLP, because the phrase habit of thought caught my attention. Is there more to forming that or restructuring it or reprogramming it that is easily accessible without specific technologies? Like, how do you even begin to speak to your subconscious and see what might be there?
So, I think this is kind of a topic in both NLP and RTT, and I think RTT encompasses a lot of NLP, and kind of adds some stuff to it.
NLP as in neuro-linguistic programming, right?
Neuro-linguistic programming, one of the ways that well, let me go
Yeah,
back.
go
So
for it.
say there's some kind of habit or behavior in your life that you want to change, right? And so say there's, let's say there's a guy named George, and George wants to change a smoking habit. So you have to kind of look at what is that smoking trying to satisfy? What's the positive intention that smoking is trying to fulfill? So in RTT and NLP, there is this idea that all of our behaviors, even the seemingly most destructive ones, are trying at some level to serve a positive intention for us. So there's no judgment when it comes to a failure to install a good habit or to get rid of a bad habit there. But that idea of intention is really, that's really what runs the habit of thought that I mentioned, is that positive intention that it's trying to fulfill. So in the case of George trying to quit smoking, say, that positive intention originally might have been to fit in with people, right? And smoking was something that his friends were doing in high school, and so he started smoking. The intention might have also been to relax, right? Because he found it a very relaxing experience to smoke. The intentions could be numerous, but for smoking, I think those are kind of two of the most common ones. So once you identify that intention, in rapid transformational therapy, you could go back to scenes, memories, times in George's life where those were the those positive intentions were not getting met by something else, and so smoking was the choice that fulfilled that positive intention. And you could do all kinds of work with that. But without getting into RTT or NLP, if you're just, listening to this and curious about one of your habits that you want to change or install, look at the positive intention behind whatever is stopping you, feel like is stopping you or blocking you in the moment. right? And so in George's case, smoking what is trying to solve this intention of relaxation and fitting in. But what happens is this kind of misalignment where smoking leads to also like a poor sense of like physical health and and a like a big like loss of money every month, right? So there's kind of this misalignment that happens with that habit. The next question you have to ask is like, okay, what kind of habits or new behaviors, three or four of them, could replace smoking, right? And that positive intention that smoking's trying to fulfill for George. And so some of them might be deep breathing, some of them might be going to the coffee shop to socialize with people instead of going outside to smoke. It could be a whole myriad of things. And then you start installing those new choices in place of the smoking. So it really comes down to what's this positive intention that's trying to be fulfilled? What are behaviors that I can plug in instead of the current behavior to fulfill that intention, and then going and doing that. And when you do it that way, you're going to find a lot more congruency between your conscious mind and your unconscious mind, because the unconscious mind is trying to fulfill that positive intention. And so if George were to just quit smoking cold turkey and not replace it with anything, then there's going to be a lack of congruency. There's going to be tension, efforting, struggle, and maybe he'll go back to smoking eventually.
So not the wisest to leave voids, so to speak.
Correct. You want to fill it, and you also want to ideally fill it with more than just one replacement, because part of the problem was a lack of choice. It was like, oh, there's this thing that I really value, connecting with people and relaxing, and the only thing that fulfills that is smoking, or that's the belief in the subconscious mind. So when it comes to habits that are hard to change, usually there's this reduction in choice. And so you have to replace the choice with more options that fulfill that positive intention. And for a lot of people, if they just do that part consciously, because there's going to be an alignment with the unconscious intention, they'll find that the habit change is a much smoother, more satisfying process that takes less effort.
I have a friend who's had that issue with smoking. He's been successful for like 6 month periods, but the issue is usually, like you mentioned, like his stress levels, family stress, or something will just be at an all-time high, and just needs that to. I don't know if it's now programmed that it's a relaxation, but a lot of people just think nicotine's relaxing, and there is it's a nootropic, so it definitely has some use for focus and relaxation. And he then has to start over. Like he'll smoke for, it's not usually a day. It's usually like 3 months or 6 months, and then it has to do it again. So in those circumstances, it is very, I can see how it'd be extremely hard. Or coffee for me, right? I've been trying to kick caffeine and coffee for like 3 years, but there's like a belief system, like you mentioned, lodged in my subconscious, which is I've been trying to figure out what the like core story is. And I think it's just I want to feel more alive. And coffee definitely, like, gives you a taste of that flow state. Almost like it actually makes me a little more scattered, but it has that like same brief pulse that I would get mountain biking, where everything is tunnel vision for a time. I'm extremely creative. I feel bristling with life, so to speak, and then obviously it disappears. So it's a poor substitute. But the belief behind it is this helps me feel more alive. Whereas I have to do, like you said, like three or four other things that are way more sustainable and don't have the crash. So I have to be well hydrated, have to have electrolytes, have to have plenty of sleep, have to have a reason to get up. If I have like all of those things in congruency, I don't need coffee. And then the only thing left is just the like ritual, which is hard by itself, and like the aroma. So there's plenty of like Coffee is a really difficult one because there's so many sensory things playing. It's not just, one or two needs, but the belief system below it has definitely been the most helpful, which is like I can replace all of those other things, but it's still the like I want to feel more alive. I want to feel more energy. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense, and I think that really seems like a good, it would make sense for coffee in particular, that it would be trying to fulfill that. And it sounds like for you, it's more of a kind of drive towards more energy versus a drive away from less energy or stress or something like that. Like it's like, oh, like I want to feel even better than I do now.
It's an optimization thing for sure, and there's also a program of like, I mean, it causes negative feedback loops, which is why I consider it a vice. Some people have no problem with it, right? They enjoy it and it doesn't create any real dysfunction, but it's the thing that I've managed to sort of tie into all my negative feedback. So it will jack my nervous system up and then I will be a little more irritable and then I'll constantly, it's literally just the definition of a drug. Like I always want to get back to that feeling that I felt for maybe an hour or so, right? At like my most productive point in the morning at 10 o'clock in the morning after it's hit. And then at like 1 o'clock, I'm looking to like get back there. So it's always a trying to get back to that original hit, so to speak, like classic drug usage for me. And then it causes like the nervous system dysregulation and a perceived lack of performance or of feeling aliveness because now I feel sluggish and lethargic. So it creates way more issues than it solves, which is why I consider it a vice and I'm trying to get off of it. But yeah, filling that need on a daily basis has been very difficult. But the it only started to move whenever I actually rewired the story of what it was acceptance of just my like normal relaxation. Just because I have businesses, the story was like I'm not allowed to relax until I had added the point at which I randomly, arbitrarily said I wanted to be financially. So it was kind of a self-acceptance thing that actually let me let go of it. Or I'm just like, if I'm just like not energized all the time, that's fine.
Interesting, interesting. Yeah, and the, how did you let go of that story, if you don't mind me asking?
Lots of breath work. It's the only thing that's helps me find the stories. Meditation, it takes, I usually am a classic case of I've been meditating for 10 years, but it takes me 15 or 20 minutes to actually sort of sort through just the rumination and the whatever energy is in place of me just staring at me without, it doesn't feel like that calm trance state for like 20 minutes. And it's oftentimes I just, give up and chalk it up to whatever I was present enough and got the like mellow breathing in. So at least I downregulated my nervous system state enough for 20 minutes. But after, if I actually sit through with it, then I can start to sort of ask my subconscious questions like why am I actually doing this? And sometimes that's when I can see the stories, or I'll get like a flash of a childhood image, kind of like you were describing something. I'll just get a picture of something like a an old program from when I was 7 or something like that. But it takes a while to get to that.
Interesting. Yeah, and it seems like breath work kind of gets you there faster.
Way faster. Yeah, because it's usually comes up whenever I just crack open and start crying. Like I'll get a picture of something. So it's almost there's a difference between like gentle breath work and like the more intense breath work I do with my men's group. One, both do the same thing. One is kind of a, you might go, the intense one definitely brings me, has lots more flashbacks. It's almost a guaranteed thing because it takes so much energy to hold the filters and stories up that I have from seeing my answer. They crumble really quickly because I literally don't have the energy to hold them up anymore. My brain kind of gives up. So I can see the stories, but it takes a lot to get there. The softer ones are so much nicer. Just like 45 minutes of belly breathing, just with like a rhythmic breathing. But that's also, I'm more likely to stop doing that one because I'm usually by myself and Sometimes it doesn't come until the end, so it just kind of feels like the story is that it's a waste of time. It's very difficult sometimes. Whereas the other one, I'm literally in a closed container with guys that are holding me, and you can't leave. So it's like, okay, we're just gonna do this, and everyone's doing it with you.
Wow, that sounds great. That sounds pretty intense.
It's well, that one's very intense for sure. Yeah, it also helps you build your capacity because yeah, you do get through it. Like everyone gets through it, so it helps you build some evidence that you can get through the hard things. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Let's go back to NLP. And you mentioned the new version of NLP when we were chatting, and that you liked that one a little more. Was that new code?
Yeah, new code NLP. So NLP's been around for a long time, and it's been used by, surprisingly, now that I'm in the kind of studying in the field of psychotherapy right now, NLP's like not really used by many practitioners, psychologists, psychotherapists. It's used by a lot of coaches. It's used by a lot of people in business, though, like Tony Robbins and those. He was kind of like one of the first big NLPers, and they use it because it works so well. But there's kind of a distinction between the traditional NLP and then this new code NLP, which has kind of come around in the last 30 years or so.
Can you touch on the premise or the how NL traditional NLP works?
So traditional NLP, very similar to RTT, it says that our brains pretty much respond to only two things: the words we tell ourselves and the pictures in our heads. And from that, each word and picture is kind of a blueprint that our body, our whole nervous system responds to, either positively or negatively. And now the thing that NLP looks at is it looks at how do we actually represent those pictures in our mind. That's really a core thing that NLP gets at. And for example, some people say who might have like a phobia of snakes kind of see this big image of a snake that kind of starts off small and kind of gets big and goes towards them. And when there's a trigger, that image is what kind of comes to mind and cues the panic response. So what NLP found is that it can be a very fast and effective way of working with those images, making those images that are distressing smaller, darker, farther away, and making all of those images that are resources to us that give us pleasurable states and positive experiences, making those bigger, brighter, and more at the forefront of our minds. And I mean, NLP does a lot of things. One of the thing it does is kind of study people who are excellent. It models excellence is one way you could describe it. The field came around from a couple of guys, Grinder and Bandler, modeling people in the area of psychotherapy who were kind of geniuses and magicians at what they did, and figuring out what were the patterns of their magic. And so another example of NLP is they found with students who struggled with spelling in like primary school. They went in and they kind of interviewed the students, like how do you actually like spell inside your mind? The students who didn't spell so well said, oh, like I hear the word and then I spell it. I kind of sound it out. And the students who were good spellers said, I hear the word and then I make a picture of the word in my mind. And then I write copy that down. And so they were able to take that strategy, the one that worked really well for the students who were good spellers, and teach it to the students who struggled with spelling. And they found that they didn't struggle with spelling nearly as much after that. So that's kind of an example of how NLP can be a really fast way of teaching people new ways of thinking, relating to the subconscious experience or subjective experience in order to obtain like a tangible objective result. And the same is true for habit change, motivation, weight loss, whatever it is. It's learning how, for example, how you, Alex, kind of represent your own unique experience, if it's coffee or whatever it is, and then changing that, working with that to find something that gives you the choices, as well as the type of experience that works for your unique case. So it's a little bit more customized in some ways than RTT is.
So it's using like large scale symbols and pictures to represent, like, I'm guessing millions of neurotransmitters and connections in the brain.
Yeah, pretty
Sort of.
much.
Okay.
Yeah. Like for example, something I'll sometimes ask people is to like think of a recent conversation you had with someone. It was not like a bad one, but just like one that was like a little like unpleasant, maybe, right? Kind of like, and usually you can see like an image of that person in your mind, and then just make that image small and further away, and notice how that changes your experience in the body. Or maybe it was something of they said or the tone of their voice, and you can just take that and make it squeaky and small and put it in your big toe and notice how that changes your experience or perception of it. And that's a little bit like how NLP looks at things. It changes how we represent our subjective experience in order to kind of help us get that quality of experience that we want.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I have this framework come up. This might have nothing to do with it, but the word masking keeps, like, it feels like, there's part of me that wants to ask if that is masking or minimizing the experience, and is there something left to be processed, and we're kind of just shrinking it? Like, have you ever come across that perspective before?
Totally. I mean that's a perspective that like I definitely have spent a lot of time thinking about. I think that RTT does a better job at like that kind of deep processing, going back and like releasing, working through and digesting whatever might be there. I think that NLP can be really good though for people who might not want to do that work or might not be ready for that work, but who still could really benefit from like some kind of better quality of experience. So like, someone might want to say like, hey, like I really want to change this lifestyle pattern. Like I want to stop eating junk food or I want to lose weight or whatever it is. I don't want to get into like all of that childhood stuff or where it comes from. NLP is a great tool in that case because there's no living reliving, the past like there is in other modalities. But for people who want to go a little deeper, then I think RTT or something else is really well suited. Yeah.
Gotcha. So
Yeah.
we're kind of trying to gain a little more neutrality over that picture or something, so it just has less pull on our neurotransmitters or our triggers or anything like that. Just
Yeah.
minimize its significance in our daily life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that something from NLP that's useful for everyone is just understanding that the images and words that come up for us in our heads, they're not fixed and they're not solid. I remember once I was working with someone and had them shrink down this disturbing image. And he said, oh my gosh, I thought that image was rock solid. I didn't know it could change. And so just that realization that our experience is workable, I think is a powerful kind of resource and learning to have.
Yeah, that's huge. The one thing that comforts me, and it's hard to see it when I'm in it, is I grew up in New Hampshire, so I have a ton of dread around the changing of the seasons, usually when the clock changes, just because of darkness, like winter is coming, so to speak. And I can easily get caught in a feeling of like hopelessness, darkness, and mild depression. And then I'll like tell someone I'm going through this, and they're just like, do you not like it? Are you dreading it because you're afraid that it won't move, that this is how you will feel forever? And I was like, yep, that's it. So right, the understanding that it will change and that it's malleable does help a lot. That is, this isn't your permanent state.
Right. Cause I know a lot of us, myself included, kind of have had this experience of like, oh, like we're talking about habits, like, oh, this is never gonna go away.
Yeah.
Like I can't change. There are all of these limiting beliefs. And there are lots of ways to give new experiences
Yeah.
that allow you to think, actually, wait. Maybe I can change, and if I could change there, what are all the other places that I could change in a positive way too?
Yeah. And I have written down from our previous chat that New Code NLP works with state of mind. So that might be a good intro into that.
And so New Code NLP kind of builds on the traditional NLP, and kind of makes the observation that, in traditional NLP, it's like, wow, these words and these images really kind of impact our state of mind, right? But then it then New Code NLP makes the observation that, wait a minute, our state of mind impacts the words and images that we experience and say to ourselves, right? When if you were in a really happy state of mind, say when the seasons were changing, like you were just describing, you wouldn't have had any of those thoughts or those beliefs even come up that, oh, this is always going to be this way, right? You might have looked out the window, it was dark, and you thought, well, it's so nice to be able to be in here by the warm fire and read. I know someone recently told me that they actually get sad when the days start getting longer because they're so cozy in the winter, and that's just an example of like how relative all of our experiences are. But so New Code NLP works just directly with the state of the body, the state of the mind at the level really of, the nervous system before there's any words or images or really any content in our experience. And so it's a totally content-free kind of way of coaching, which can be attractive for some people. And essentially, just like I was telling you, Captain Jack Sparrow said, the problem isn't the problem, your attitude's the problem. It's kind of like that. The problem isn't the problem, the state of mind that you're in when you encounter the problem is the problem. So New Code NLP has all kinds of games, exercises, activities. It works with breath a lot, getting back to breath work to change the state of mind, and then to kind of tie that state of mind to that situation where you want to have more experience or some kind of more choice.
Okay. How is that applicable to habit formation, or does it require? It's hard to realize what state of mind you're in if you're slipping into it, right? So does that work better if someone is sort of on the outside, not having the experience, or does there require some like presence of mind for you to sort of watch what's happening as it's happening?
The basic kind of New Code NLP techniques kind of create a container where you're able to kind of, in a controlled way, experience how that state of mind shifts. So you kind of train. It's like going to the gym and changing how you react to things before you actually are in the real world. But it's totally applicable to habit change, because before, if it's, say, a good habit that you're trying to install, or a bad habit that you're trying to get away from, in either case, say you're struggling to make that change, before the thoughts of, oh, like, I'll save this for tomorrow, or like, oh, like I don't want to do this right now, before all of that happens, there's first a state of mind that comes in, maybe very subtly, like you said. And so if you can become aware of that and choose activities that kind of keep you out of that state of mind, or shift that state of mind, you'll experience likely a greater ease, and less kind of triggering kind of events around the habit change.
Gotcha. So which ones would you say are, if you want to rank them in terms of like acuteness or abruptness or quickness for sort of rapid change? It sounds like rapid transformation would be the quickest, but also the most intense, right?
Potentially. I think it really depends on the individual situation, I would say. I would say if you feel like the problem or the habit has kind of something to do with something that has to do with your personal history, that's very significant, then rapid transformational therapy might be a bit better in that case. If it has something to do with like a some kind of limiting belief that is kind of very significant to your sense of self, your identity, rapid transformational therapy, I think, is really great at working with that sense of self, those limiting beliefs, and that past history. And NLP, is, I think, really great at the phase of reinforcing the new behaviors that you want. It's really great at, so there's this metaphor of, you sit down to play the piano, and say I practice every day for, 5 months, and I get good at playing the piano. Those are all neural pathways in my mind, right? You could go back, and I could kind of delve into my personal history and know exactly why I chose to play the piano and not the saxophone, and all of that. But that wouldn't change the fact that, like, when I sit down in front of the piano, my hands just like start playing it. They know how to, they know how to walk that path. So, first you have to kind of, some understanding of the past can be really useful. But then I think en the NLP techniques are really great at actually helping you change those neural pathways. Not that you'd want to stop playing the piano. It's not a great metaphor, but it would actually help you, so that you sit down and you think, like, wait, like, oh, there's something else that I could do right now, or like, I can't exactly remember, like, what key do I play first in this song? And you get kind of confused, and you're like, oh, like, I'll go do something else. NLP is really good at that, at kind of, we call it future pacing, making sure that you have resources accessible to you in the future, in these kind of contexts where there might be cues to engage in the old habit pattern. And then new code NLP, I think, is right there with regular NLP as far as like its use. It's just kind of, I think it'd be more useful for some people who are kind of more kinesthetically oriented, more in tune with their bodies. New code NLP, because it uses a lot of movement, can be kind of a more engaging full body dynamic way of going about change. Yeah. Does that kind of make
It
sense?
does. Yeah,
Yeah.
sort of the different sections of the body that they work with, or yeah, specific. If someone's struggling with a specific part of it, they're like, "Oh, I know what part of my history this came from, but I still need to actually reprogram and learn the actual, make this easier and get the reps in, so to speak."
Yeah, totally. And that's kind of where a lot of people run into to challenges with the habit change, is that they might know, like, oh, like this has to do with this and this and this from, this many years ago, but the pattern, the actual like neurological pathway, it's still there, and that's what kind of needs to be changed so that there's more options available. More choices.
So in the framework of like start, stop, like which is, if someone's trying to change a habit, there was, I don't remember exactly how it went. It was in my health coaching protocols a while ago, but it was like easiest to hardest, like to either start a new one or to stop one and replace it. Or what do you think that, just in terms of like bandwidth in daily life, starting something new is easier than like stopping an addictive habit?
I would say yes, just because, for the addictive habit, you kind of, it's like stopping a big ship. First, the momentum of the sh you cut the engines, but there's still the momentum carrying the ship forward, and then it stops, and you kind of have to then turn it around and go in the direction that you want to go in. Whereas a pod, starting a habit from scratch, that you don't necessarily have that inertia working against you, unless there is something that you're giving up in order to start that new habit. And in a lot of cases, you are giving up something when you start a new habit,
Yeah,
right?
and that's, I think, a lot of people try, and I've certainly tried to do, make themselves stop something they know, or they know they'd like to give up, and start something new, hoping that it's, you're just going to have to come to a decision where they need the energy, or the vice, so to speak, is pulling them down, and they're going to have to make a conscious decision that in order to keep pursuing their new thing that gives them all these benefits, they're going to have to stop it. Have you ever seen that work?
Like in order to like start this new habit, you have to stop this old thing.
Or in order to progress in the new habit that you've already s started, because you need the bandwidth or the capacity or the energy, and the other one's just sucking it down. Sort of they present themselves with like a large decision, but now they have a reason enough because they've gotten a taste of the new joy or the new dopamine coming in from the new positive habit. Does that work in the long run?
I think I think that can work in the long run. I think it depends on like how big the habit is, though. Like the book Atomic Habits, kind of this really popular book, talks about how the secret to habit change is like little incremental gains, like changing 1% better every day. A lot of it has to do, though, with like you just said, like how you think about that new habit, right? If people get a taste of like, oh, this could be really good, our minds are, designed to keep, keep to the familiar on the one hand, the old way of things, and on the other hand, they're designed to move us away from pain and towards pleasure. So if you make that new habit sound really pleasurable, and you make that old habit sound kind of painful, like, oh, like that coffee made me irritable, and you remember all those feelings during the day of like agitation after you drink it, and you think of these new habits and like all those kind of expansive, relaxed states that are accessible to you through them, then that kind of makes the mind be like, oh, like I'm gonna start going in this direction and making this the new normal. Once it's the new normal, then it's going to just stick with that because the mind likes the familiar.
Right. The thing I forgot to mention that did replace or fill the void of that buzz from coffee, sort of the nervous system, the sympathetic activation was actually like a fairly consistent Qigong practice where I did like energy cultivation in the body, where at the end I would feel like vibrating, like almost like I felt like lightning coming out of my fingertips. And I was like, oh, interesting. I am way more calm, but it's the same hum, the same buzz within my body. So it filled the need without the like crash in 3 hours, so to speak, without the all of the negative feedback loops. Didn't dysregulate my nervous system. It was a gentler come back down into parasympathetic after I didn't sort of need the energy and the focus anymore.
Oh, that's great. And it
Yeah.
sounds like it's something that also like you can do anytime you want, right? Like you don't have to go to the store to get
Right.
a cup of coffee anymore.
Well, part of the problem with that is I've never been able to make coffee at my house or any sort of like anything that had the same effect as coffee. Part of the enjoyment of it was it got me out of my house first thing in the morning. And I'm the type of person that just likes seeing the sun and my body wakes up outside. So it was the get me out of the house to like greet the day thing. So there's just so many like positive benefits that I had to plug, which is why it's been taken 3 years, because there was probably like 12 different things that the whole experience around it served, but had the severe negative consequences. So I was just trying to like plug all of them, and it's just been overwhelming. But yeah, little tips and tricks and things have worked along the way. And from
Right, yeah. Slow by slow.
yeah, who do you think would, so you mentioned you were trending into addiction recovery. Is that accurate? That definitely screams as the like sect of people that would benefit most from like a dramatic rewiring of their brain. Are there any other big sort of, you see this these technologies making like huge impacts in any like subsect of people? What do you usually see for these making the big movers in?
I hear you. Yeah, good question. Well, I mean, I think obviously like addiction is probably like the most acute need for these types of resources. And then I guess I'd kind of include in that category smoking and stuff like that. I think that also though it's really helpful, beneficial for people who say struggle with procrastination or lack of motivation, if you were to look at that kind of as a habit, as procrastination as oh, it's this thing I habitually do, I think that that's an area, a population of folks who could really benefit from something like this, as well as people who want to kind of take their athletic game or their career to kind of the next level, but they know that in order to do that, it's going to take a bit of a change in their everyday lifestyle, right? Kind of saying goodbye to some things that were taking too much time or energy in order to emphasize the things that are going to help build their skill set. So I think that's the other population that could really benefit from this.
So the optimization side of it.
Optimization side of it. And I think with students as well, study habits, it really makes such a difference. And it can be it can be just such a relief when you find out that your mind can actually work for you. And you don't have to be fighting it all the time. It's such a relief, and it opens so many doors of possibilities of all of the things that you could do or you would want to do, if you had that congruency, if your mind was really your best friend, the realm of possibilities is really infinite when that happens,
Are there, is this tied into affirmations at all? So there's a ton of sort of the first thing you hit in any new, you start a new business endeavor. Probably some of the coaching that's going to come with it is mindset, right? It's just like sort of teaching yourself to be able to have any success, like just Is this in the realm of affirmation, sort of using language to reprogram belief systems?
Yes, and no. Affirmations at the right time, like affirmations are used a bit in RTT, for example. They're not used in NLP though. But they're only used after that the kind of the root causes of the obstacle have been removed and you've kind of unidentified with those old limiting beliefs and those old stories. Then you can plug in the affirmations because then there will be more congruence. You won't be fighting it as much. So the problem with affirmations are people usually just like start repeating what they want, and that causes more of a polarization in the system because they really want this affirmation to be true, but at some level they're saying it because they feel like it's not true and they need to get there. So there's this polarity that happens, and what RTT or NLP is good at is working a little bit more gently than affirmations, a little bit at below the surface to change that kind of subconscious experience so that the affirmation then just seems to be obvious, right? It's not like, oh, like I'm confident, I'm confident, confident. It's like, oh, wait, yeah, I am confident. I can, I can feel it. I can think of all these times when I was confident. I'm confident versus being like, I'm confident, I'm confident, I'm confident, and thinking of all the times you weren't confident subconsciously, right? Big difference.
Yeah, I think Joe Dispenza puts it, with people doing that without actually ha sort of having the heart mind coherence. They're like, if you say that just in your normal life, it stops right at your brainstem because your brain will be like, no, you aren't. Here's all the examples. So it'll just, yeah, it'll stop it. Like it will have zero effect. You try to brute force its way through almost, and it doesn't work if part of you doesn't believe it.
You can change the language though a little bit, and that can be to make it more absorbable instead of being like, I am confident or I am whatever it is. You could say every day I'm becoming a little bit more. And by saying it that way, it's more believable to the unconscious.
Right, you can't disprove it immediately. You're like, yeah, okay, you're right.
Exactly.
There was a reprogram in I was doing the Silva method, Jose Silva technique, through Mind Valley for a little bit, and it was really stupid at the beginning, but I was like, oh, I see. And it was at the end of every meditation, it was every day in every way I'm becoming something and something. So it was a progress, right? You couldn't disprove it. Because if you were doing the meditations, then you had evidence that, and you were slowly reprogramming. It didn't fully take effect because it's hard to sustain those like dramatic shifts if you're not in congruence in like a couple of parts of your life. But it was definitely more believable. Like I accepted it whenever I was saying, because I was like, no, I just did this like 20-minute visualization thing. Like I'm doing it. So yeah.
Must be the case. The Silva method, I've heard good things about it. I know my dad actually quit smoking cigarettes many years ago through use of the Silva method.
I mean, it's basically mind control on yourself. You're just like, it's, I mean, if I knew what RTT felt like, it's definitely putting yourself into a hypnotic state. And there's all sorts of like very specific visualizations, like making a projector, like they get you into a trance state first, just with number programming. Like you go 3, 3, 3, 2, 2, 1, like you program yourself to be able to slip into a trance or hypnotic state quicker and quicker and quicker with each time. And then they teach you how to put a sort of the projector up, and it's at a 20 degrees above the horizon. So there's very specific instructions, and it actually matched quite vividly. I did a going to slightly more woo-woo territory, but not really. It was a third eye training, and it was through an energetic institute. These are like stage one, just like how to basically intro training to be a clairvoyant or psychic. They're like, we all have these like extrasensory gifts. You just never train them. Like your third eye is essentially just a super atrophied muscle for most people. And the steps to actually like start awakening it, which is weird because you can feel it in breath work. You'll start vibrating, right? It's a piezoelectric semiconductor in your pineal gland. And the visualizations were the exact same as the Silver method. It was just like coming up into your center of head, they called it, and then making this projector about the same angle out in front of you. And I was like, oh, okay. So this is the non-dogmatic way of how to sort of do quote visualization and actually
Interesting.
like start seeing that in front of you and just painting a picture. It's not necessarily like imagining it in your mind. You're seeing it on a screen in front of you, so to speak. It's your like lifelike movie.
Interesting. Yeah, it
Yeah.
sounds pretty similar to some NLP stuff,
Yeah,
actually.
I tend to believe
Pretty
things
similar.
more, or it gets through my analyzer, my left brain a little easier if multiple modalities that have nothing to do with each other use the same technique. And I was like, oh, okay,
Right.
this is probably the technique.
There
And then
must be
you can
something to
pile on
this.
whatever belief system you want on top of it for whatever goal. But this is right. This is might be a human technique. Yeah. It's pretty cool to feel this area of your head vibrating, especially if you come from an engineering background and you have zero, like me, just non-acceptance of anything that's just not in your body, and to feel like where your third eye should be vibrating is a trip. Yeah.
I hear you. I kind of came from a, not an engineering background, but definitely more of like an empirical
Yeah.
kind of scientific background. And when I got into, Tai Chi and Qigong and started doing those kinds of practices and started feeling this stuff in my body, I was like, oh, this is wild. It really
Yeah.
changed my whole kind of a world view pretty
Right.
radically.
Yeah, same. Yeah, that's a good, those are good bridges. Sort of it doesn't have to require acceptance by your mind if your body is feeling it. Right. This experience overrides my analyzer, so to speak, most days of the week. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Are there any other major topics that you think are super useful or sort of pathways or bridges that we'd miss tying all of those together or in practical use or just some heavy hitters for people?
I mean, I think as far as habit change goes, I mean, those modalities, like I said, like have a lot of other applications in business, in communications, in education, and in other areas of change work, personal development, self-image, and all of that stuff. But as far as habit change goes, I think that, the takeaway from all three of these different approaches is that it really comes down to congruency and making sure that that unmet need or that positive intention is met by multiple choices. So it comes down to choice and congruency. The way you get congruency is by identifying that unmet intent, that positive intention. The way you get choice is by putting in, multiple choices that meet those unmet intentions. Now, the way that you do that looks very different in each one of those systems. Some of it you're not even aware that you're doing it. Your body just kind of gives you a signal that it's selected new choices, right? In other ones, it's much more conscious, like, oh, I can do A, B, and C, and I'm gonna plug that in and put it out on a projector or visualize it. So, more like that. But it really comes down to choice and congruency, right? And when you have the feeling that you have choices, and when those choices satisfy what that need is inside of you, then that change of habit is going to be much more pleasant than without those choices, or when that positive intention is not met and replaced.
Yeah, well said. Who do you primarily like to work with? And if you are accepting new clients, where can people find you?
So I don't have a super specific niche at the moment, apart from habit change. I do also do some personal development coaching. And my website is willsreed.com.
Okay, I'll put it in the comments.
And you can go there to kind of learn more, and to like schedule a discovery call with me, or you can just reach out to me directly at willsreedcoaching at Gmail to do that. And that's where I would direct people to go.
Perfect. If you don't have any final words of wisdom, then I thank you very much for your time, and this was super helpful for me specifically. I'm sure other people, because
Awesome.
I mean, I ch try to change so much in my life. So it's those knowing there are different modalities is really empowering. Like I think I get stuck just kind of with jumping between the different methodologies. Like I was talking about, like doing meditations or doing visualization or doing trying to brute force it. So knowing that there are hyper specific protocols based off of what stage you're at is really empowering.
And I mean, that's really what habit change is all about at a level, I think, is that knowing that we all have these, interior resources, and there are all of these choices and options out there, not only to help us change a habit, but that we can actually find within ourselves to make that change easier. I totally agree with you there, Alex. A relief for me to find these
Yeah.
modalities as well.
Cool. I will let you get back on with your day, and thank you very much, Wells.
All right. Thank you, Alex. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for making it all the way through, everyone. If you like this video, if you enjoyed it, if it gave you some value, make sure to like and subscribe just so I know you're out there listening. Feel free to leave a comment on what you got or what you would like to see in future videos. I'm going to implement probably at least the NLP section of this. As we went over, I had a multi-year or have a multi-year addiction, love-hate affair, mostly hate with caffeine and with stimulants, just on my addiction to go-go, being in the business space. And it's been a journey to try to actually just live in a relaxed, more parasympathetic, more restful state during that process. Business can be sometimes stressful with finances, with health, with everything. So if you found any of this useful for rewiring some of those old programs and finding what's holding you back, let me know. And we are approaching the new year when this comes out. So if you are looking for a accountability coach or protocols to actually help you feel a little more alive, whether that's better sleep, whether that's less stimulation, stress management, the primal protocols, I have now done functional nutritional therapy, which is using food as medicine and actually on a more reductionist side. So taking food out to help you feel more of your baseline and basically just cutting through a lot of the toxicity out there. Get your sleep nailed down, get you on an enjoyable, sustainable movement pattern. There's usually something in someone's life that they haven't implemented, that they've tried multiple times, and they just can't quite figure out what's blocking them, what's stagnant, why it won't just work. And that's what I do. That's what my coaching specialization is in the primal protocols, the how to turn your genetics on to help work with you towards your goals of simply feeling more alive.